I joined airborne forces in June 1942, and I got my parachute wings, went out to North Africa with the 1st Parachute Brigade in November, and we fought in the hills of Tunisia as infantry, and throughout the Tunisian campaign I was wounded in March 1943
in Tunisia,
convalesced and returned to my unit, ready for the invasion of Sicily, in which I took part as well. The 1st Parachute Brigade was assigned to attack the Primacella Bridge to south of Catania airfield. The airborne invasion of Sicily was a bit of a disaster. The air landing brigade, which went off on the first day to capture Syracuse, half the gliders landed in the sea because there was an offshore wind, and they never made the shore, you know, they cast off too far out to sea. And hundreds of the air landing brigade infantry were drowned.
Were you landing by glider or?
A parachute.
You were parachute.
Then 3 days later we landed by parachute on the plain south of Catania. There again we were met by very heavy flak. My plane was shot down shortly after I jumped. We came roaring in over the sea at about 50 feet, I suppose, and when we crossed the coast, the pilot climbed to 500 feet, which was a jumping height, and just before we jumped, the plane was hit, and a big gaping hole appeared in the cabin above the roof, and we were all hanging on to an anchor cable above our heads, waiting to jump. I was standing in the door, and as soon as the green light came on, out the door went as fast as it could go. I think all the plane load got out, all 20 of us, I think. But the plane, I think, was shot down because it never got back to North Africa anyway. The whole brigade was scattered all over Sicily. And the 1st Battalion and the 3rd Battalion, which were about 500 strong, they ended up with about 100 and less than 100 people in each battalion. You know. The 2nd Battalion was slightly better off. I think they had about 150 to 200 out of 500. I was the only troop of the sappers to arrive at the bridge. The bridge was captured, and I was responsible with my lot for taking the explosive charges off the bridge. We held the bridge throughout a day against German paratroops. And then we had to evacuate us just before dark. Made our own way back to the lines, you know, which I did. Returned to North Africa. And then we prepared for the invasion of Italy, which we went to Italy by sea, on board naval vessels mostly. Landed at Catania, at Taranto port. And the this was a whole airborne division by this time. They moved up country, you know, through Bari and Brindisi and so on, up as far as Foggia. Then after that we came back to this country, and just before Christmas in 1943, and then we prepared for the second front. You know, we weren't used in the second front, although we were warned for 16 airborne operations before we finally went to Ireland in September.
Of 44.
And I was wounded on the second day again. I got shot through the chest and ended up in a hospital in Ireland, which obviously was in German hands by that time. And I got evacuated into Germany and remained
a prisoner. You were taken prisoner?
Yes. I remained a prisoner of war until release in 1945.
What rank did you reach?
I was still a lieutenant.
Lieutenant?
Yes.
Were you decorated?
No, I never quite got as far as that. One of my sappers got decorated in the MM after the Primosolar Bridge. But
you were lucky to have survived the war.
I was very lucky to have survived, yes. I count myself very lucky to be alive today, yes.
Are you affected physically by war wounds?
No, I'm a little bit dramatically in my left shoulder when I was wounded in North Africa. And
you were shot through the chest?
I was shot through, it went in here and out through here.
Did it get your lungs?
I think it must have skated, it collapsed the lung.
Did it?
I had what's called a pneumothorax. I was treated by one of our surgeons of the 16th Parachute Field Ambulance.
Who'd also been captured?
Yes, they were all in German hands by this time. But he was alive. Lippmann Kessel, he became a very famous surgeon of St. Mary's Paddington. Mm. He was a South African, he was a Jew, and he was an all-in wrestler. The commander of the 16th Parachute Field Ambulance, and he chose all his officers with great care, and they'd all been sort of athletes of one kind or another. One had been a sort of Scottish university heavyweight boxing champion and that sort of thing. He was a marvelous surgeon there.
So you survived the war, repatriated?
I survived the war, yeah. Well, yes, no, we weren't repatriated. We were just towards the end of the war, that's another story actually, that when the Allies crossed the Rhine, all the off legs, which were quite close to, were in the centre of Germany, you know. They were evacuated by the Germans, and we had to march eastwards away from the advancing Allies. And we managed to keep about 10 miles ahead of the advancing Allies for a fortnight. Before we left camp, one of the officers in the camp sort of bet the German camp security officer, whose name was Hauptmann Heil, that it was useless of marching us away because we'd be overtaken by our own troops very soon, you know, much better than Hauptmann Heil said, oh, you'll be all right, we'll keep you safe, you know. So this other officer said, oh, I bet you 100 marks that you'll be released within a fortnight. Well, we'd been marching right through the Harz Mountains down the other side towards the Elbe. Then one night, the Germans said, we are going to have you picked up by big lorries and they'll take you to a railway station on the Elbe and then you'll go down to Austria. And of course our hearts actually sank by this time because we hadn't heard any fighting at all for about a few days. These lorries were almost non-existent in the German army at that time. Anyway, five huge lorries came, a big diesel lorry, manned by the Waffen-SS, the Liebstandarte Adolf Hitler Division, which was Hitler's bodyguard. And this looked pretty bleak. Anyway, they drove us 70 miles at night eastwards to the Elbe, you know, and we were put into a big farm just short of the railway station, which I can't remember which one it was anyway. And we were told that the next day a train would come that night to take us to Austria. And of course that train never came. So they said, never mind, the train will come tomorrow night and you stay here one day. Which we did, and they were full of sort of misery really, and something going so far away, obviously going to be held as hostages down in Austria. And it was a lovely sort of spring day, you know, the sun was shining just like yesterday. And towards evening, the sort of larks were singing in the meadows. And suddenly, out of the blue, came bang, 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 bang. Five shells went straight over and pitched on the village beyond us, you know. And we all sort of woke up because we were sort of just getting our kit together to march down to the station. And then there's rattling machine gun fire, sort of all about a mile away, I suppose. when all the camp guards disappeared, except that over the high farm wall, which was about 10 feet high all the way around this closed farmyard, came a white envelope. And somebody picked it up, there was an officer's name written on the outside, and inside was a 100-mark note. It was Hauptmann Hauer paying his
gambling debt.
His gambling debt.
Well,
so,
thank you very much.
The next day, actually, we spent a very uneasy night in this farm, wondering what to do, because to go outside risked instant execution by the SS, who assumed that any British officer or something like that
was trying to escape.
Well, organizing the resistance and instant execution, so we stayed where we were. And the next morning at dawn, there was a sort of tractor noise outside, and we thought, goodness, these German farmers, they do get up early to plow their fields. We looked over the wall, and there was an American German tank sort of sitting outside.
Really? That was the end of your war?
And that was the end of the war. That was just before Easter.
Yes.
And we returned to this country.